Hello and welcome to the Mastering Social Media for Schools podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Gribble. I've been celebrating students and staff on social media since 2014. I'm in the trenches with you, and I know it's not an easy task. So if you're responsible for Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more for a K-12 school district, you are in the right spot. You're going to lean in and learn some simple, actionable tips to help you reach even more people. And that's all going to happen while keeping your sanity. So let's get started. Hey there, welcome to the podcast. I am so excited to introduce you to a new friend of mine, Miranda Greenwald. She actually works with schools on some marketing efforts. She's a consultant, and you're going to learn all about her background. Really got started a lot in the fundraising world, which comes in handy when we're working with schools. She's going to talk really about her definition of marketing. She's also a college instructor for marketing, and she really talks about, you know, marketing isn't just selling. Marketing is influencing and inspiring behavior. Think about that. Influencing and inspiring behavior. Sometimes we can get caught up in what a marketing plan is, and she's going to break it down into the steps of what that is and what that entails. And we're going to dive deep kind of into the target audience and how your community gets information and gets communication. You're going to learn a lot in this episode. You're going to love listening to Miranda and learning from her. And if you love this podcast and you have not purchased your copy of Social Media for Schools, what are you waiting for? We've got this book out and available. Buena Farrell says, I highly recommend this book to anyone working in school PR. Andrea is a wealth of knowledge, and this book has been so helpful and a great resource. We have 30 reviews out there on Amazon. We are at a 4.9. I've got 1.4 and I've got 29.5 ratings. You guys, this is a helpful guide to have on your desk to help you through. You can get it on Amazon. You can also head over to my website, socialschoolforedu.com, to grab your copy. Now let's get to today's K-12 PR tip. All right, today's K-12 PR tip is about Instagram, and just a special shout out for all of my members that are currently going through our annual Instagram challenge. Woo! You guys are kicking butt. We are taking massive action. You guys are winning prizes. You're getting better on Instagram. Your community, your staff, your students love it. I'm so, so proud of you. So keep it up. But with Instagram, there are a lot of nuances that you may not realize, and I wanted to bring one to your attention. And this tip has to do with carousel posts. Posts on Instagram that you make to your feed or to your grid can have anywhere from 1 to 10 pictures, okay? But did you know that you can actually combine and post videos and photos in that 10, I guess, content, type post? You can. I saw this and I was like, how did they do that? Well, it's Instagram just lets you. Whereas when you're on Facebook, it's often, well, it's pretty much impossible to post on a business page, both photos and images, photos and video in the same post. Instagram allows you to do that up to 10. You could have 3 videos, you could have 5 pictures, and, you know, and 2 more videos. You can do whatever you want as far as the combination of 10, but it can be a combination of video and photos. So I hope that helps. If you ever get content or have content that, you know, you have both photos and videos, and, you know, on Facebook, that's really hard to do, you could post those on Instagram. You also may be able to post that onto your Facebook page from your Instagram account to be able to post both. I will warn you, I tried this morning and it didn't give me that option. So just, you know, Instagram can be tricky. I know for another one of our team members here at Social School for EDU, it did work. So Instagram, you can post up to 10 photos or videos in that carousel post. Now let's get to this week's interview with Miranda. Hello, Miranda, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you.
Another Wisconsinite is joining me, and Miranda is helping out schools with some marketing efforts. You've kind of got a unique background, then your role with Marketing Matters by Miranda now. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your journey and then your current role in helping schools?
Sure. So when I was in business school, I was a marketing major, and I knew pretty early on that my perspective and what I wanted to do was a little bit different from my classmates. But I kept going with it because if I was honest with myself, I loved marketing and I loved everything about business, but I just didn't see myself in the, you know, high-strung corporate world and in the for-profit world. It just really wasn't for me. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but just didn't feel like it was for me. So I stuck with it, and I'm so glad that I did, because my very first job out of college was as a major gift officer for actually the university that I graduated from. And in that role, I was responsible for securing gifts of $25,000 and above. And I learned very early in that position that it wasn't ever about the money. It was about connecting with people, learning about what their philanthropic goals were, how they wanted to make a difference in the world. And if we could find a way to connect needs at the university to things that they wanted to accomplish in their legacy, then we were able to make some pretty cool magic happen. So I learned a lot just about connecting with people and moving communities forward. And even though it's not really seen as a traditional marketing role, it really was word of mouth marketing. Looking back, it was pretty obvious, but it's not normally thought of as a marketing role. So then I went on to become a major gift officer at UW-La Crosse. And so I did that for a little while, found a really big passion for higher education. It really reinforced it when I was there, but I still had an interest in kind of the traditional comprehensive marketing world, but still love the public sector. So I became the marketing and communications manager at the La Crosse Airport. And the airport was a department of the city of La Crosse. And so we were a government organization, and I was the first of my kind hired at the airport to do marketing. And so it was a really new and exciting role. We were really starting to realize how important marketing was for the public sector, even though it wasn't a traditional role that municipals hired for, but learned a lot in that job. I love being around planes. I love travel. So it was a really great program to build. But it was really far away from home, and my husband and I wanted to start a family. So I had the opportunity to grow in my career again, and I became the marketing director at a hospital closer to where I live. Moved into an executive role there, managed a team. We were a nonprofit, so kind of learned a lot about the nonprofit side of marketing. And then, you know, I was there for about 3.5 years, and it kind of got to the point where this pulling dream to be in higher ed and to start my own business just kept waking me up at night. And so I had the opportunity to join the faculty at UW-Stout teaching marketing classes, and it just felt like, okay, this is my sign. I'm going to do it. So I made the leap and was able to start my business alongside starting to teach. So that's where I'm at now.
That's awesome. I love the fact that, you know, traditional marketing is all about selling. And your first role, you stepped into that major gift officer. So you're trying to get money, but essentially it's almost selling, like the opportunity to give.
Exactly.
But you kind of saw how that the connections were what mattered most.
Right.
And I'm sure that now that you are, so you're serving in a teaching capacity for UW-Stout, but you're also starting to serve nonprofit and schools with marketing efforts. And I'm sure those connections really matter in that realm, right?
They do, for sure. Yes. And something you said really hit on. I always tell my students on the very first day of class that if there's one thing I want you to learn about marketing, is that it's more than just selling products and services. You know, at its core, when we think about marketing and fundamentally what organizations are trying to do, it's influencing and inspiring behavior. You know, and if that's behavior and towards helping out a cause or advancing a mission or buying a product or service, whatever that may be, marketing is trying to inspire and influence behavior. And so when you can take that and apply it outside of the corporate world, and we can apply that to the nonprofit and the public sector, specifically in the public sector, that's really not been cultured to know how to do marketing. It really starts to open up, and you know, you can see pretty evidently why it's important for organizations to think about that.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so influence and inspire behavior. That's really what marketing is about. And when we think about schools, I guess, what would you say is the goal of, you know, because I've got a lot of school communicators listening to this, and they're obviously trying to get students and get, you know, keep students in their schools. So what would you say is that influence and inspiration that we're really trying to instill in that audience, I guess?
Well, I think the most immediate thing is really just working to build stronger affinities between the school and the community. You know, yes, the hope is that then that leads into growing enrollment and attracting students into the district. But before you do that, you have to build a strong affinity with your community through strong marketing. So how can we put out information and connect with our community that then creates brand ambassadors across our community so that, you know, we're not the only ones responsible for driving that enrollment, but how can we build a positive image and grow that connection so that when Grandma Sue is at Christmas and she's just been so thrilled about what the school's been doing, you know, conversation gets brought up about, you know, not being super happy with the district that they're in or whatnot. Well, can you believe what our school is doing? They, you know, you start to build those conversations, and then all of a sudden you've got brand ambassadors that are going up to bat for you just because you've gotten good at telling your story and building those strong connections with your community. So that's kind of the first step. And then again, once you can build that, then you can then use that momentum to, you know, and then it'll just work for itself. You know, then right. You bring students, you retain them, you attract teachers. And so it kind of creates this great momentum forward to be able to achieve all those things.
Okay. And I'm sure everybody listening is like, oh, now I know why Andrea and Miranda get along, because we're talking about those strong connections in the community. And, you know, obviously social media plays a role in that, but it goes beyond that. And that's where I think you're really coming in to work with schools, because a lot of schools are at kind of a different place than we've been in the past. You know, we got declining enrollment. We've got, you know, kind of poor community perception as a whole, especially for our public schools. And we're really struggling to recruit those high quality teachers, and even support roles are really, really tough. So I think schools are really being forced into thinking about marketing. So what are some of the first steps you take when trying to help a school create kind of that comprehensive marketing plan?
Sure. No, that makes sense. I think the biggest thing that also kind of gets lost in the marketing shuffle is that I also try to tell my students and my clients that your brand, your logo is more than just colors and words on a paper. You know, your brand and the logo that you use to put your organization forward, that should serve as a representation of your mission, vision, and values, why you're there, what makes you unique. And if you can build a culture around understanding what it means to be a part of that school brand, it provides a lot of great direction for then how we make decisions on social media and how we make decisions and how we write our press releases and where we, you know, when we talk on the radio and things like that. So really just starting fundamentally with their brand and thinking about, you know, how we're building those associations. So I'm also getting my doctorate right now. And so I read a lot of studies about consumer behavior, and I love this kind of stuff. But when you think about how marketing works from a scientific perspective, you know, the brain really works as a filing system. And so when you see a brand like Target, when you're shown that brand, you know, you immediately have associations that your brain is making based on experiences that you've had with them, positive or negative, right? And so a school's brand, you know, if someone sees that brand, they're immediately going to have associations, positive or negative, based on things that they've experienced. And so if you can set a direction for a brand and you can then build your culture that then is reinforcing that, then you're building those positive associations every time someone sees that brand. And when you can build that momentum around it, then it makes those decisions a lot easier, and you can build a lot of cohesion that then helps with retention and things like that.
Yeah, I think you hear the word brand and then you automatically think of a logo or you think of the colors. It's you certainly need some of that with it, but that's not the only thing. And really trying to establish, like you said, the culture. I'm thinking about, just the word marketing plan is a little overwhelming. But can you break down any steps of what is a marketing plan?
Sure. So, the way that I can, the way that I try to approach it is, first you should have what I like to call a brand promise. So just a paragraph that just articulates, who you are, what you're trying to accomplish, what your goals are. Then you should have an articulated mission, vision, and values, which a lot of schools probably already have. So sometimes it's a matter of just taking what's already there, or is, do we need to revisit it? Are there tweaks that we need to make? But then from there, really starting to look at, okay, who are we communicating to? Who is our target audience? And that's kind of another big buzzword that I think gets thrown around a lot, but there's a lot more to it than people think. The more specific and intentional you can be about your target audience, the easier it is to then build out your marketing plan. So a big chunk of it is really trying to determine who are we talking to. And if someone tries to say we're talking to everybody in our community, you're not going to talk to anybody in your community. And a lot of people have a hard time getting past the reality that just because you articulate that this is your target audience that you're trying to communicate to, doesn't mean that nobody else matters, doesn't mean that there aren't other people that you're going to serve. But you should have in your head, who is it specifically that we're trying to talk to? Because then that then helps to drive the decisions. What I always like to say is if you don't know what keeps your target audience up at night and what encourages them or drives them towards being happy, then you're not gonna be able to communicate well to them. And so, and it's not even just a matter of, oh, we're talking to parents. Okay, well, who's the main driver in the parent situation making the decision about, school activities, school enrollment, whatever? Okay, mom. Okay, is it every mom? Probably not, because the mom that has a graduating senior, we're probably not talking to her. Is it the mom that's got multiple kids that, they've got kids across multiple schools? Is it the mom that is really community forward? Or is it the mom that, you know what I mean? Like really breaking down that, who is it that's going to be most likely to take action? And then let's talk to them. Because if we can encourage them to take action, then the rest of it's going to take care of itself. You know what I
Yeah.
mean?
I like to. This is an analogy I just came up with, Miranda. I have six kids. If I yelled out to all six kids, "Hey, you've got to clean up, the kitchen," nobody would respond. But if I say, "Kyra, it is your turn to clean up the kitchen," it's like you're directing that message. It's probably going to get taken action on. The other kids maybe hear it and they are really happy that it's not their turn, but they know their turn's probably coming up. But I'm just thinking, like, it's okay to be direct and make sure, because sometimes, like you said, when you talk to everybody, you talk to no one. It's just like that email you send out where you're like, "Hey, I need something. I need a story from your classroom," but if you specifically ask somebody. So I think that's really important. And then you said something important as well, as what keeps them up at night. So thinking like what they really are caring about is going to help your messaging and your communication and your branding and your marketing plan, right?
Because similar to that, and this sounds very cliche, but in the school district that I'm working with now, I hear a lot, well, we're a small school with big opportunity. Okay, awesome. I'm glad to hear that. But every other small school is saying that. So what is it that we can say that's going to make you feel different? And it can't be something that applies to the broad community. Because once you say things that are very general like that, you're not going to cut through the clutter. It's kind of like in higher education. Oh, we have great hands-on learning. Good for you. So does everyone else, So really thinking about in your messaging that this is a chance to just move the needle on one segment of your target audience. And if we could move that needle effectively and then do that over and over again, then we're going to build momentum. But when you try to move everything all at once, the world is too saturated, right now that it's not going to be effective.
Yeah, I think of those individual stories are what's powerful. I mean, you talk about higher ed. My daughter is at UW-Madison this year, and she's going to take a class right after the spring semester And she gets to go to Iceland for 2 weeks.
That's
And
awesome.
they get to do hands-on learning in Iceland. So you talk about, hey, we've got hands-on learning experiences to, hey, here's a story about a student who got to go to Iceland. You can see how that draws in their attention, and they're going to be like, wow, that is really cool versus the general statement, right?
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and we're all about telling stories, obviously with social media, but within a marketing plan, there's going to be different ways that we're communicating, our vision, our mission, our values, and we're communicating to that target audience. Can you list some of the various ways that schools should be thinking about like the tools they're using for the marketing efforts? Because there's a lot out there. And some of them we might not even think as marketing, but
Yeah,
explain that.
that's a great question. And I didn't do a very good job of simplifying the marketing plan in the last question. So before I
Okay.
answer that, let me just help, because I think when you articulate your brand promise, then you have your mission, vision, and values, then you're articulating who your primary and secondary target audience is. But then it's then actually determining how that target audience likes to consume information and what kind of information motivates them. And articulating that is a really important step, because then that then helps you make decisions as to what kinds of communications that you should be focusing on. Because
Okay.
again, a lot of people like to, organizations say, well, we're gonna do everything. And again, well, if doing a newsletter, if newsletters aren't what's impacting or reaching your target audience, then why are you doing it? I'd much rather you take that time and energy and put it towards social media, if that's what we've determined is the best tool for your target audience, so that you're not wasting resources on things that's not actually moving the needle for your target audience. So determining that, and then putting together then content strategies for how we're then going to reach them through those tools. So
Okay.
like an example, and I'm sure you speak to this too, but if your target audience is this, then maybe we want to do 20% of our content on student stories, 30% of our content on new programming. So you can start to do a percentage of allocation based on what kinds of things your target audience cares about, which then helps you then to set content directions. So kind of going back to the tools, obviously social media is the number one most powerful tool that schools can use. But there's also press releases is a really big thing. Learning how to write a good press release and when to use them and when to not use them. Like, for example, a lot of schools have gotten to be good at using social media on a regular basis, but then how do we change our strategy when we have a referendum or when there's a conversation in the community that's controversial? How are we combating that? So press releases are a big thing. If it's appropriate, newsletters and emails, direct mail can be a good tool, again, depending on the message and what you're trying who you're trying to reach. There's lots of, you could do digital ads and things like that, but that kind of gets to be if you only have something specific that you're trying to really communicate. But the biggest thing is social media, press releases, newsletters, emails, and sometimes direct mail, I would say.
Okay. And then how does your website turn in or fit into that? Because I mean, obviously everybody has a website. They need a website. But is that something that is kind of just given that some of that information, those tools and those methods are also going to be included on a website? So if somebody went to look for that information?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I kind of think of it as a given. It's not, it is a tool, but it's, the way we know it in digital marketing that I always teach my students too, is that your website should be where you plant your roots in the digital world, right? And everything that you do should be trying to direct people back to your website. And so if you're sharing a story on social media, an opportunity could be that you share a snippet of it and then, read the full story here on our website, or read the full calendar of events on, here on our website. If you have a press release and you're talking about a referendum coming up, visit this page on our website to learn more. Because you really want to try to direct that engagement in one place so that you can better gauge where people are spending their time, the content that they care about, where we're converting people. And so, yeah, your website should host any information that you're talking about through these tools.
Yeah, my friend Joe Sanfilippo is like, no parent really wakes up in the morning and is like, oh my gosh, I wonder what's on the school website today. But they are looking at social media, they're looking at their emails. So, all the things that you talked about are really ways that you are getting their attention. And then you can end up directing them back to that website, but it's not necessarily that they're going there first, right?
Yep. And this is kind of a weird formula, but I always like to try to coach organizations to think of it as like someone should be able to look at your social media, get the story, know what's going on, leave with a good sense of I got what I needed out of that content. But for those that want to engage further, should have the opportunity to do so. So you want to get enough on your social media to where someone could look at that and feel satisfied with the information that they're being given, but also have the opportunity to further engage. Versus some people will go where they just put teasers out on social media and just, try really hard to get people to their website. And it's like, that's not really that engaging because not everyone wants to take that extra step. So it's trying to find that middle ground of being both satisfying, but then not letting that be the end all be all.
That's really good. So you, and we touched on it a little bit already, but you say that, strong storytelling it's pretty uncommon in the nonprofit and on the public sector marketing. Why is that so important, and how can schools utilize strong storytelling?
So this is fascinating because I've learned a lot about this in the last year or so, because there's a study out there where this group of professors, they wanted to see how well nonprofits were utilizing storytelling. Okay. And storytelling in its true art form is character centered. That character then overcomes challenges over time and then, achieves success or overcomes that adversity at the end, right? That's storytelling in its true form. And so this group of professors found 150 nonprofits and surveyed them about their communication strategy. And 97% of those nonprofits reported that storytelling was at the center of their communication strategy. So then those same professors then took those nonprofits, looked at every single communication piece that they put out in the last year, every social media post. And when they really looked at it and applied the true definition of storytelling, well less than half of them were actually utilizing storytelling in its true form, because there are things like testimonials, informational summaries, those aren't stories. And the reason why storytelling is important is because scientifically it has the best chances of engaging people at that deep level that we want to be able to keep them engaged. And so yes, informational summaries and testimonials can be engaging, but they aren't nearly as engaging as when you can craft content into a true story in that way where it's character-centered, overcome challenges, have success in the end. And so if you can really, and it seems like it's a minor adjustment, but if you look at kind of the same content side by side, one as an informational summary and one as a story, it reads very, very different. And so even just taking content and looking at it through that lens can really elevate content pretty quickly and, entice engagement at a much different level.
Yeah, I love that. That's a very interesting study. I'm sure if we interviewed and asked all of our school folks if, what's at the center, they would probably say storytelling, and I bet it would be similar. It's like, well, half of you maybe are doing a good job at that, but we all have room for improvement.
Yeah.
So this is the social media marketing, a podcast on social media for schools. So with that being such an important tool, and you talked about it being like the most important tool, it just seems to be, so widely used. Why is social media so important, and how do you feel it can be used to its fullest potential?
Sure. So I think another important distinction to make for social media is to think about, like, for your own social media experience, right? If you're going to choose to have a brand be a part of your social media experience, you have to really like them. You have to really be connected. You have to really, because if you're choosing to have a brand be part of that experience, it's very personal to you, right? And so schools, though, have such a unique opportunity because parents typically want to feel connected to their kids' school. Even community members want to feel connected to what the school is doing. So schools schools already have an advantage in, you know, encouraging people to like, share, comment on their content, because a lot of people want to see that kind of content in their feed, you know, versus a traditional brand who's trying to sell a product. It's, you know, it's a much harder sell to get people to actively want to have that in their feed. And so schools should really use that to their advantage and really be encouraging community members to, you know, be a part of this online community, you know, for our school, and helping to give feedback and helping to give input and showing their love for students who are going on this trip, you know. So sometimes it's even as quote unquote simple, and I know I'm preaching to the choir, you know, for this audience, but, you know, if you're telling a story about a student who got a all expenses paid trip to Washington, D.C., you know, even just saying things like, let's show the student some love and, you know, comment a favorite place that they should go and see while they're there, you know, just things to really just pull people out and encourage them to engage in a meaningful way can really help to really help schools to use social media to its full advantage and kind of build that community around that online presence.
Okay. Now I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to be anxious to hear what you said, what you'll say. I just was on a conference call today with a school that's going to a referendum.
Okay.
And they just said, you know, we want to talk about it, Andrea, that, you know, I'd really just prefer to have the comments all turned off on social media. The likes and the shares are fine, but I really don't want the comments on there. I have a strong opinion on that, but I want to hear from your standpoint. Is that helping a school with their marketing efforts, and why are we, why not? I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So I'm really glad you brought that up, because it is kind of a sticky thing. And I'm not a lawyer, so, you know, I have to confirm this, but something that is very true, though, that public sector organizations have to be aware of, is that when they're putting content out on social media, that's public information. And any community member could technically file an open records request for any information related to X, Y, and Z, and that would include social media content. Now, that's a really emerging, it's a really emerging topic in the public sector, especially public sector marketing. But there are laws around information that you put out on social media and your obligation as a public sector organization to maintain that. And you don't want to do anything that makes anyone feel like you're restricting free speech, right? And so when you turn off comments, then, you know, is it illegal? I don't know. I mean, you know, you'd have to really talk to a lawyer about that, but you're not doing yourself any services by even putting out the impression that you're trying to restrict free speech and that you're not allowing for an open forum on social media. Because if you're going to be on social media, then you have to be willing to commit to it and its full potential and allow it to be the open forum that it was designed to be. And so now, again, are there instances where it's easy, you know, not easier, but and I hate to bring out this example, but like the situation that UWL is going through right now with their chancellor, I've noticed that they've started to turn off, you know, comments on any posts related to the transition. And it's like, yeah, you know, I could kind of see that. Is it kind of a gray line? Yes. But when you weigh the pros and cons, it's probably an okay choice. But unless there's something like that where it's really high profile and really, you know, could get ugly pretty quickly, you're better off allowing for an open forum so that people don't feel restricted in what they can say and how they engage with the content, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And they know that they can't comment. So that's the view of, hey, trust and transparency and things like that. But the other thing is, and my big thing is, social media, like, the channel itself is meant to be social.
Yeah.
And you're the only way to reach more people is to encourage more engagement. Like you said, you're asking those questions. Where's a favorite place that they should visit while they're in Washington, D.C.? I mean, those are the types of questions. And then when you get comments, the algorithm says, hey, this is important, content, we're going to show it to more people. So really, by limiting comments, you're really going to restrict your ability to use social media to its fullest potential to reach your community and beyond with all the great things happening. And, you know, for every negative comment, there's usually 30 positive comments. And so I just hate to think of the fact of turning off the ability to get great engagement, great feedback, you know, improve your school for just that chance of that one person commenting something.
I totally agree. And I think another thing that's important to call out too is that if you know you're going to be putting something out that could spur some controversy, then it's important to have a plan in place for how you're responding to those negative comments. How quickly can we take the conversation offline without deleting anything? So even just as simple as whenever there's a comment like that, you know, we thank you so much for your input. You know, please email this email or, you know, call this number and I'd be happy to talk to you about it further. Because it seems like, and I don't have any data to prove this, but as soon as the original organization responds to a comment like that, it's kind of like, oh shoot, I guess they are watching. I better be careful what I say, you know? So it kind of shuts it down pretty fast and it kind of really tests, you know, is this person saying this like they're serious enough where then they're going to reach out to continue this conversation, or are they just saying it to say it and they don't have a lot of, and that kind of gives you a gauge as to how serious the comment really was and whether it is a deeper seated issue that they should be, you know, aware of.
Yeah, definitely. So as we wrap up, what would you say is your best social media tip?
You know, I think we went through a lot of them. Just the storytelling and the encouraging engagement whenever you can, directing people back to your website. But something we haven't mentioned is really jumping on trends. And I almost cringe saying that because I've always been one to take the road less traveled. I don't do things just because everyone else does it. But I've had to really force myself to think of it more as, especially in the context of social media, the reason why trends exist is because it's content that people want to see. And so it's not just jumping on trends, but thinking about it more as, you know, being up to date and putting out the content that people want to see, which is typically, you know, the trends. So staying up on trends, and also just having fun. I mean, part of the good thing about social media is that you have the opportunity to show some personality and be lighthearted. And, you know, and I think that's the one tool that schools have in their tool belt where they can really be there. You know, be playful and show some personality. So not being afraid to do that. You know, your school, you're enticing learning and you're doing fun things and you're doing great things for the students. Like, have fun with it. You know, the audiences love that and the students love it.
Yeah, I love it. And an easy way to keep up with what's trending is to include your students in your
Yes.
storytelling as well. So, great advice, Miranda. We could probably talk all day. I've loved this conversation. If somebody's listening and they're like, gosh, you know, Miranda might really be able to help out our school in moving forward with some marketing efforts and some initiatives. You know, how do you work with schools? And maybe you want to share some of your best way to stay connected to you.
Sure. So I would say, you know, we can probably include my email, you know,
Yep.
somewhere. But that would be the best thing, just making a connection. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm working on building a website, so I can't, I know I'm preaching to the choir, of course, but just as I'm starting off, you know, sending an email and just starting the conversation, asking questions, because I think the best piece of advice, and this isn't meant to be a shameless plug, but you know, we all are good in our own areas, and so really just being honest as an organization to say, okay, we need some help with marketing. You know, let's not try to do it all ourselves. Let's, you know, invest in having someone come in from a different perspective that can see things a little bit differently, that can bring everything together, because that relatively small investment is going to be able to set you up for success for a long time. So not being afraid to ask for that help and to invest in it, I think is a really, really important thing to consider. So yeah,
Yeah.
find me on LinkedIn or send me an email.
Okay. And what is your email? Could you just read it out? Just
Yep, it's Miranda, MIRANDA dot Greenwald, GREENWOLD at gmail.com.
okay. Miranda Greenwald at gmail.com. What I love is, you know, you would help kind of draft out, okay, what are the steps? Because schools know they need to take steps, but they don't necessarily know what steps they need to take. A lot of times you have the ability to probably do some of these things that Miranda described today, but you don't even know what you have to do, you know. And so I think you can really help pull that together. And I'm sure you'd help take action on the implementation side as
Oh, yeah.
well. But if they want to do it all themselves, they can, right?
So looking at all the communication pieces you already have, let's look at them, see if there's opportunities to make it better. Let's create some templates so that, you know, you have really beautiful pieces that you can then, you know, add on and change every, you know, every time, to make sure it aligns with everything. So, and I guess the last thing I'll just reinforce, because this is especially important in public organizations. organizations is that it's not just about growing your reach and growing enrollment and doing all of that, but this is also an opportunity for you to be really resourceful with the resources that you have. You know, if you only have so much time and money in a year to do marketing, let's make sure that the time and money that you're spending on it is actually making a difference and you're not doing something just because, you know, you think that that's what you should be doing or that's what marketing is. So,
yeah. Absolutely. You mentioned direct mail. Well, there's a cost to that. And sometimes that can be pretty substantial. So where do we want to put everything? Awesome advice. Thank you so much for joining us today. You can check out more from Miranda by emailing her LinkedIn. I know she'll have a website as well soon. But thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
All right. Well, everybody, we'll see you back next week with another great guest. And until then, keep telling those real stories, not those fake stories. Right, Miranda?
Right.
Yes, you got this. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. I want to let you in on a little secret. Creating this podcast is my favorite thing to do. Now, I have a pretty amazing job all around, but podcasting is my happy place. Of course, podcasting doesn't pay the bills, and I have six kids, remember? So I wanted to remind you of the three ways I help schools through my paid programs. Number one, and most popular, is my membership group. You can join my exclusive virtual community designed for school social media managers. It offers a treasure trove of resources, including Canva templates, daily support, live weekly training sessions, and access to a vast library of webinars. You guys, with over 400 schools across the country already benefiting from this vibrant community, you'll gain insights and tools that can supercharge your school's social media presence. Number two way that I serve schools is speaking. I love to share my passion for social media, and I do this with communication organizations across the country and school districts. You know, my keynotes really deliver actionable tips and strategies that can be implemented immediately, ensuring that your school stays ahead of the communication curve. And last, number three, my team and I, we actually do social media management for schools. So many school districts struggle to stay consistent on social media, and that's due to a lack of dedicated communication personnel. So that's where we come in. Our team will partner with your school district to manage your Facebook and Instagram accounts, and we ensure a consistent flow of compelling stories that come directly from your staff. That's it. If you are interested in getting more details on number one, the membership group, number two, speaking, number three, the social media management, hop on over to my website, socialschool4edu.com. And then until next time, keep telling those stories.